Breaking news today on Seculo, a Senate shakeup as a prominent Democrat defects from the party.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo.
This is going to disappoint a lot of Democrats, and they're also going to feel like they don't understand. Why would you do this at a time when the Democratic Party is having a good week?
Well, I think folks at home in Arizona have known me for a very long time, and they know who I am. I've always been someone who is focused on getting results, getting things done, and I've never fit neatly into any party box. I've never really tried. I don't want to, and I think that's reflective of how most Arizonans live.
We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110.
Well, I intend to maintain my position on my committees and keep doing the work that I've been doing for Arizona. So I don't think that things will change in terms of how I operate or the work that I do in the United States Senate.
And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
Hey, welcome to Seculo. We're taking your calls to 1-800-684-3110. Two really breaking issues. We're going to discuss Kristen Sinema, of course, this move in the U.S. Senate, and then the Twitter files part two that have been released and how the shadow banning was going on, the dethrottling going on at Twitter, and how Elon Musk is trying to correct it as well, which I retweeted last night. We'll go through all of that in a little bit later in the broadcast. So I want to start with Kristen Sinema, because at a time when the Democrats were about to take the Senate 51-49, she decides to leave her party. Now, there's a couple reasons behind this. She has an election coming up in 2 years. She was going to be challenged from the left. And we've seen this a couple times. We saw it with Joe Lieberman. We've seen it with Angus King in May when he left the Republican Party, and he might have been challenged from the right. So we've seen people, and Bernie Sanders, of course, is an independent, who, again, run as independent in states where they've already are well-known, like she is in Arizona, that has a pretty independent kind of politics anyways, maverick kind of politics in that John McCain kind of old-school style. And so she had some personal reasons to do this, because it takes her out of being challenged by the Democrat Party. She'll run as an independent. And she's got her whole machine in place, but won't have to go through a nasty Democrat primary. Now, the difference here is the first thing I asked when I saw this news this morning, and my brother texted me, I said, is she still caucusing with the Democrats?
Yes.
And the answer is she plans to keep her committee seats. She's no longer going to attend Democrat caucus meetings, which Bernie Sanders and Angus King, the other two independents, do. They effectively are Democrats for purposes of Senate math. She doesn't even know if her desk is going to stay on the same side as the Democrats in the U.S. Senate. Now, here's the one part of this is, as of right now, this still does not change the balance of power. So I think she probably was only going to make this move if Warnock beat Walker, which he did. And thus, that she could make the move to independent without giving power over to either the 50-50 Senate or Republican Senate. But it does certainly, it puts a wedge in, as we played from Jake Tapper, his question to Kristen Sinema. It puts a wedge in her whole, in the entire Democrat talking point of, we're doing so great, we're the ones winning, because a Republican House is about to come in as well, and now you've got this new kind of actor in the Senate. It also raises back the profile inside the Democrat Party of Joe Manchin.
Yeah, so it's an interesting dynamic because, and of course the news is going ballistic because this kind of upsets the apple cart. We don't know exactly where this is going to fall in. But one of the things that is clear, and I think that we've got to recognize here, is at the end of this process, when she decides, she could caucus with the Republicans if she wanted to, or not caucus with anyone. The question will she keep her committee seats? And that's going to be the great challenge. But you think it's because she's got competition coming?
Well, that was definitely part of it. I mean, she was going to have a challenge from the left in Arizona. It didn't mean she couldn't win the primary. But I think as someone, you can really only do this if you've been established. If you're an Angus King from Maine, if you're Bernie Sanders from Vermont, if you were Joe Lieberman from Connecticut, he did this as well when he was challenged from the left.
Yeah.
So I think she said, I'm going to vote the same way, which is still pretty liberal, but a little bit better on issues like border security and issues like that. That she just felt she was never really a Democrat in the first place. And so she's taking herself out of that structure. If you've got questions about it, 1-800-684-3110. She says she plans on keeping her committee seats. They don't have to give them to her. So that's going to be an interesting power struggle as well. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to Secchio. We're taking your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110. We're going to get into the Twitter files in just a bit. But we want to start with the breaking news about Kyrsten Sinema. What it's not is a balance of power shakeup in who controls the U.S. Senate. That will still be
that way. The media.
It's a loss for different. Listen, anytime someone who was in your party after election decides to leave your party and say, I don't care about your apparatus, I don't need the DNC, I don't need your fundraising support, I don't need your grassroots support, probably you were going to run a candidate against me, which is was likely the case in 2024. So I'm stepping back. I have my own machine. It's going to be the Kyrsten Sinema machine as an independent in a state where that can actually work. In Arizona, it's proven to work in places like that. And so and also she had problems with the Arizona Democrat Party being way too liberal as well. So she's saying I don't think this is a Tulsi Gabbard move. I mean, it's not like she's becoming a Republican. But and really, the only way she could really hurt the Democrats, and even this would not take their power away, would be if she said, I'm going to caucus with the Republicans.
But you mentioned the thing about Joe Manchin, whose power diminished when they got 51-49. Yes. Does this change that dynamic? You think it might?
It could, because he's still part of the apparatus, so he can ask for more in those caucus meetings to get his vote. He can say, you know, you've got to do more.
But they didn't do what he asked. This last time.
They put it into legislation. It got voted out by liberals in the Democrat Party and Republicans, who sent a clear message to Joe Manchin, stop trusting Chuck Schumer or Nancy Pelosi to put in pipeline legislation in anything when their entire party is about ending fossil fuel in America. So, I mean, I think that was a huge loss for him. And it really showed, he talks about all that power he has, how little power he really did have at the end of the day as one U.S. senator who could not deliver for a state. Yeah. And that was this whole reason why he justified supporting the Inflation Reduction Act.
Right.
The one thing that turned people against him in West Virginia. And his selling point was, I'm going to get you this pipeline. Well, his jobs, no pipelines going to West Virginia.
What's also interesting in all this is, of course, the Republicans are going to take over the House of Representatives on January 3rd. By, you know, it looks like somewhere between 3 to 5 seats. Yep. So they'll pick a majority leader. It looks like it was going to be Kevin McCarthy.
Yeah.
And they will move forward. So that is the block and tackle of legislation initiatives. Sure. We did lose, the Republicans did lose the Senate, even 50-50 on the committees. That's a problem. The interesting dynamic is, will this change that? And that's going to be totally up to Kyrsten Sinema.
Yeah. I mean, again, even if she left and went to the Republican Party, they would have a majority. Right. So, again, it would be that's 50-50. I don't think she's making that move. So, Chuck Schumer's still going to be majority leader. They're going to still have control over the committees as of right now, unless she decides to make a decision to caucus with Republicans. There's nothing that appears like that is the case in her statement. She actually says the opposite about both parties, that neither party, she doesn't fit into either party's structure. I would say that the Republican Party is a much bigger tent party right now. That the Democrat Party has gotten so liberal,
yep.
You've got to meet all of their standards. But end of the day, what it does show is even after success, they've got major cracks going on within their party as well. I think both parties.
At least on YouTube, is there a chance Joe Manchin leaves the Democratic Party? Probably not.
I think it's like we need to stop. You know, if it ever happened, fine, it happened. Wonderful. Stop thinking that it will. I think he just plays people for that. He's a big spending Democrat.
Yeah,
that's what he always supports. He loves spending big federal. He loves spending your tax dollars. He's supported the increase in the IRS agents.
Which is something I like to see the Republicans, when they get in control of the House, stop that.
Stop the appropriation process.
Yeah, stop the appropriation
slow
process.
It down.
Put more agents on the border, less IRS agents being hired. 87,000 IRS agents is ridiculous.
Yeah, and $80 billion.
That's going to correct their problems? No, it's not.
Yeah, they want to go after people who make under like $200,000 a
year. They're trying to go after what they call gig jobs.
It's all the stuff we were talking about with Venmo and all of that, with the $600 having to be reported through a 1099. They're going to sit down.
But those kind of things, I think, can change. I think we can see some changes in that front, and that's a good thing.
Well, Sinema was one of those people who said, this is wrong. We're not going to do, we should put it back to... At minimum, maybe like 5,000, but why don't we just keep it at the 20,000 and 200 transactions.
You know, it's interesting. We're getting a lot of comments coming in on Rumble and also on Facebook and YouTube. Joey on Rumble writes, Joe Manchin is for Joe Manchin and not for West Virginia. He voted for several bills with Green New Deal garbage in it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
that was his words, garbage, not mine. But
yeah, I think that Joe Manchin really gave up on caring about a lot of that when he did vote for the Inflation Reduction Act. What he was going to try to pivot to later on was, remember, you guys didn't like that I voted for this. Now look what I brought back in return was this big pipeline with all these jobs. That's not coming back anymore. So he's supposedly very angry. So you got angry Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema leaving. And what I think it does show is, like Tulsi, that is like Tulsi, there is a very narrow person politically to match up with the Democrat Party. And you have to, like, especially when you're a U.S. senator, I think maybe in the House it might be a little different, but at the Senate level, when you're like one of 100, you have to match up with all of the state party and the national party, which is very far left. And if you don't match up with that, they want you out. I mean, what used to be the far left of their party, they talk about a lot about the far right running the Republican Party. The far left is running the Democrat Party too.
Right.
I mean, that's clear with this move from Kyrsten Sinema.
The question, again, I want people to understand this, is as we look at the issues that we're dealing with congressionally, I'm talking about our government affairs office. So the way the ACLJ is structured, we've got our lawyers, we've got a government affairs office, we got a government accountability project. Of course, we've got the ACLJ action. But you look at this legislatively, this presents a possible opportunity in the Senate to move some more blocking and tackle.
That's right. She's been opposed to getting rid of the filibuster.
Yep.
And now she's not going to have the party pressure.
Right.
Also, for groups like ACLJ, and we're nonpartisan, but we're seen as a conservative group.
Right.
Her staff would usually be very careful about engaging because they're part of the Democrat Party. This opens us up to be able to even go to Kyrsten Sinema. Say, you know, you're not. Yeah, but like you're not. Yeah, to say like you're not part of this party, that party. So if there's a, like you said, specific issue, which we know we could work with her on, whether it's border security or the filibuster issue, I think this opens up her staff to be able to communicate with us and not feel like they are going to get in trouble for even taking a phone call from the ACLJ, which is the case on most Democrats.
Used to, by the way, back when we started, we had Democrats that we represented before the Supreme Court in amicus briefs.
Yeah. Well, that's not the case. That's not the world we live in anyways in like our lives and like how divided people are with partisan politics. So that, of course, that translates to Washington, D.C.
Calls also on all this 1-800-684-3110. And, you know, the one thing that's interesting is she waited until after the midterm election.
Yes.
And she waited until after the Herschel Walker Warnock race.
Right. I think she did not want to throw power to the Republican Party. So she was not trying to make Mitch McConnell majority leader. So she, because if she would have announced this before Herschel's race, I think that would have added a whole new enthusiasm to try and get Walker across the line, like a different kind of money being spent.
Oh, yeah.
Because you said maybe we have this shot of actually taking back the Senate as well. So she didn't do that. That was not the move. I think the move was Herschel Walker lost. I can leave the Democrat Party, but I'm not really hurting them.
And it also puts her as a real power player.
Yeah, she's still right in the middle.
Yeah,
she's that vote that's key for them and key for Republicans to help block things, which she has been a vocal opponent of getting rid of the filibuster, which is really right now is a little bit of a moot point, except because the nominees can already go through.
Correct. That's already done.
And the legislation's not going to go through because the House is going to not pass.
Right. So is it fair to say, do you think that Joe Biden's lame duck at this point?
Yes, unless he really, I mean, I think these kind of moves show that too. This happened to Republicans with Angus King. Remember, he pulled this on Republicans a much nastier way. But yes, I think, listen, we're not going to see a lot of groundbreaking legislation on either right or left moving through Congress the next 2 years. And Republicans are going to block any kind of new spending, any kind of major new liberal plans. That's not going to it's not going to go through. But again, we know what the nominees, we know what the committee power. They still can get through whoever they want if there's a Supreme Court vacancy.
Yep.
They have to just get to 51. That's the same for the lower courts as well. Same for cabinet officials. But when it comes to legislation itself, the filibuster is still in place. With that plus a Republican House, there shouldn't be any legislation moving that's not truly a compromise that Republicans agree with.
All right, so let me tell you what we've got going on. We are filing, hopefully today, if not, it'll be Monday morning, our reply brief in the Supreme Court case involving religious liberty. We had an argument in the Sixth Circuit, two of them, one on Tuesday, one on Thursday. Look at all of these, and you say this, that it's important to support the work of the ACLJ. Because we're talking now about legislative and our government affairs office. You make a big difference here. ACLJ.org.
Yeah, support the work of the ACLJ. You can double the impact of your donation at ACLJ.org. We have our matching challenge right now through the month of December. It's an easy process to understand. We have a group of donors that will match each donation that comes through. So if you donate $50 at ACLJ.org right now, we have a donor that's going to match that $50 donation. Very simple. So it's like $100 for the ACLJ. Be a part of that. It's why we can. We have the resources that we do, and we can deploy those resources. ACLJ.org. Donate today. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to Secio. We are taking your calls on this, too. The Twitter part two of the files. Now we're learning shadow banning real, dethrottling real, access to your own followers real, take your inability to even reach people who want to follow you to make sure that you don't trend, to make sure your statements don't trend, was all real. It was all being, and it was not done through AI. It was done specifically by individuals at Twitter, a team at Twitter. We knew that, again, it was Jim Baker from the FBI, who was at the FBI's general counsel, who moved to Twitter, who was blocking this release as of last week. He's now been moved out of Twitter by Elon Musk, as the new term moved out.
He was unconvincing in his response, according to Elon, of why he should stick around.
Yes, he's no good. But it was trying to keep this moving. So we have this sound. I want to play it for you because this was a stelter. Going to Jack Dorsey, who created Twitter, was their CEO for a long time. And he said, you know, outright, just ask him this question. Take a listen.
The president called you out for shadow banning. What is the truth around that idea?
So I think a lot of the statements behind the statement and the question behind the question is, look, shadow banning is a very widely defined term. There's not one single definition. So definition that we found that seems to resonate with the most people is, not amplifying particular messages, or if someone puts out a tweet, hiding that tweet from everyone without that person who tweeted it knowing about it. So, but the real question behind the question is, are we doing something according to political ideology or viewpoints? And we are not. Period.
I think it's in
both.
Yeah, but what is shadow? I think for a lot of our listeners, what is shadow banning?
I mean, it's what he kind of said. It's what we've kind of been said, which is you don't know necessarily that your message is not getting out there.
You put it out on Twitter and it just...
Yeah, it's just not getting served, essentially.
And like it could be really popular, but it's only going to get to a handful
of people. That's why you see some accounts have millions of followers, but then, you know, that tweet only had one interaction or something happened. You had to go seek it out to find it.
Yeah.
So they weren't just saying people who are getting banned or getting their accounts suspended. And what happened here is he's saying, no, we don't do that. And what we've learned in the Twitter files that came out, part two that came out yesterday from Barry Weiss, is absolutely they were doing that. And they were doing that, as you said, not even in a way that was AI driven. They did it in the way you would think of if you were just coming up with a really basic conspiratorial way of looking at it, which I honestly thought wasn't how these kind of big tech organizations run, which is literally just people creating lists of people not to be served.
Yeah, like Dan Bongino was on a search blacklist. So if you search for him, you wouldn't find his account. Things like that. Like he still had an account.
Yeah, they weren't suspending his account.
But you couldn't find it if you were someone new.
Are we on any of these lists?
We've been banned from ads. So in 2017, we had run an advertising campaign. Now, this is kind of the end of Twitter. So a lot of this is because we're all reusing Twitter again and trying to use, because a lot of you have come back to Twitter. We've gone back to utilize it more. We got very basic with it. We basically post the live link to the show and our blogs. but no commentary, no back and forth.
It wasn't worth it.
Because it became a hellhole. Really.
It really did. It became where a lot of hate would come from, would only be from Twitter, and we weren't getting the interactions like we once were.
Right, you weren't getting your people's support for it. So you're like, you weren't reaching an audience that mattered except for a bunch of people that didn't like you.
So
then we went back. We had our guys, though.
Just the last few weeks.
Wasn't even here in 2017.
Right, our social media team. And I said, hey, I've noticed, you know, obviously people are getting back on Twitter. We need to start looking at ad campaigns to run on Twitter. We wouldn't mind spending some more of our ad dollars there. We spend it on other social media platforms. Might as well share it on one of the few that's preaching free speech right now. And we went to go log in to set up ads and realized that your account, as well as your account, both of you, Jay and Jordan, both have no ability currently to run ads based on something we don't know what it was back 6 years ago. And that's
where the shadow banning is. We have no idea what it was. We don't know what it was.
Yeah, we have no information of what happened in that time period.
No notice or anything like that.
No, and look, we know what we post. We are pretty, like, middle of the road in terms of the way we use social media. Yeah. We are not posting things that are extremist points of view. So something happened there, but still, 6-7 years later, we can't even run, we can't even spend money with Twitter, even if we wanted to. And that's something hopefully will get rectified in the near future.
Well, Elon Musk tweeted out that they're working on a software update.
Yeah, this is pretty interesting.
To show you your true account status.
What does that also mean?
Are you on any of these lists?
Yeah.
Have you been dethrottled? So are you on a list that doesn't get your message out? Are you not on a search list? Are you on the banned from ads list? And then this supposedly will allow you to figure out the reason why and how to appeal.
Yeah, and Facebook has some of this in their back end already where you can see, well, this got flagged for this. If you got hit with a disinformation, misinformation, and you kind of can know a few reasons why this stuff might happen. However, it's still never clear, and you never know if you're being dethrottled. It actually says on there, yeah, we may actually serve it to less people. There's at least a little more honesty in the fact that they may be serving it to less. Twitter doesn't really have that. So right now, you're going to be able to go, kind of like your Uber score, I have a feeling, and go see, you know, what you've been ranked. And that will be pretty fascinating to see the inside workings of Twitter like this. And that's what this really is showing, and you got to give it to Elon for that, is to show the inner workings of how a lot of these big social media empires work.
Yeah, I mean, this is huge. I want to take calls, too, from folks, because everybody who was told you're a conspiracy theorist, everybody that was told that they were a conspiracy theorist, it was right.
Yeah, I mean, even to, like I said, almost comedically, because I really just did not expect it to be this simplified, that this was Charlie Kirk said something wrong. We put him on a graphic. There's a list. It has, you know, different things that they can't do, whether it is, yeah, we're looking at it right now, recent abuse strikes, notification. It has do not amplify and those kind of things put on there. And they even had accounts that they knew maybe in that sort of gray area of violation, but they knew would cause them some chaos if they banned them, saying, do not ban this account without talking to a supervisor. So we even know that there were those accounts. So if it was a Dan Bongino who they were definitely shadow banning, or it was a Charlie Kirk, instead of banning them, which maybe someone who is looking at the monitoring of tweets said, we should ban them, they put a little thing on there saying, don't do it, because we know this will be bring them down.
It was called the Strategic Response Team-Global Escalation Team, SRT-GIT. 200 cases a day.
A day.
A day. These were individuals, not that this is not AI driven. So it's not like they put in keywords like COVID vaccine. This was individuals to say, what do we do to this account? And again, it was a little different. That's why he answered that question, I think, that way. He defined shadow banning for his purposes.
But even in his definition, they were doing that.
But they were also doing the other part. So you might get your account suspended. You might get your account permanently thrown out. You might get just a message under your tweet. You might get dethrottled, so your message is not. You might be taken off the searchability. You might have your ability to advertise taken away. These were all different steps, but what we're seeing is that it wasn't a computer doing this. All these companies always love to blame the computer and say, oh, it's an AI error, and maybe we get this fixed, but then there's no one to contact anymore because they've all had to fire so much staff, like Facebook and Twitter. So, Elon Musk says it's going to be a computer-driven program to rectify this. He's not saying they can do it overnight.
I'd like to see hear from our audience. If you're back on Twitter, if you're following Twitter or using Twitter or going to it as a source, I'd like to hear from you. Or if you've decided you're still not going to, 1-800-684-3110, a whole half hour coming up. Don't forget, support the work of the ACLJ Winter Matching Challenge campaign. December's the biggest month of the year for us. Any amount you donate, we get a matching gift for. So ACLJ. aclj.org. That's aclj.org. And your gift is doubled. Someone is going to match it. So if you donated $50, we're getting another 50. So we get 100 and it only costs you 50, which we appreciate. That's how it works in the matching challenge campaign. But again, if you want to talk to us, we've got a lot more to talk about in the next half hour, but I'm going to talk about this Twitter a little bit more. 1-800-684-3110. Your experience on it. Back with more in a moment.
Keeping you informed and engaged now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Jordan Seculo.
All right, welcome back to Seculo. We are talking about the Twitter release part two. So as we talk about this logo, I mean, there was the first release that went through Matt Taibbi. That was tell people about that one.
Yeah, that first one came out, was it maybe about a week ago, maybe less than a week ago, over the weekend. Matt Taibbi dropped the first Twitter files, which was really about suppression of news information, suppression of something like the Hunter Biden situation. So that came out.
That was more about the story that they would suppress, not the accounts. Yeah.
Then it went over, this is kind of going to be ping-ponging. So now it went over to Barry Weiss, who then put out Twitter Files Part 2, which is about the blacklisting, and because that's what they were creating. They were creating blacklist. They were creating shadow ban accounts. And it really goes deep dive into whether it is the comedic ones, like the libs of TikTok, or whether it's Charlie Kirk, or whether it's Dan Bongino, and going through, and again, probably likely us, due to some things we've discovered recently, of why things got banned, and really even how it all worked. It's really fascinating. I encourage everyone to go read it. And it's pages and pages, so it's not something we can just read on the air. But that's great. And then we know part three is coming back to Matt Taibbi, who will now take part three. And we don't know what that will be on necessarily, but we'll see.
But we were, like I said, we were banned because of ads. People, we got good calls coming in. Let's go ahead and take them. 1-800-684-3110. What do you think?
Yeah, Norm in Washington, D.C. on line one. Hey, Norm.
Yeah, hey, thanks for taking my call. I was just curious. You know, I know that we can't sue Twitter or, you know, any of the other social medias directly, but now that we know who the culprits are, can they be held liable, and can, you know, organizations sue people like, you know, Jim Baker?
Tough, because of Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act.
They're broad immunity. They can't be hauled before Congress.
Yes. But I think what happened, though, is Elon Musk is trying to fix all this. So you could, you know, tie me up by going to congressional hearings, but I got to try to get this fixed. And I think
Elon Musk is not. It's, could you pull Baker?
The older ones.
Yeah, but you're not. Baker was an employee of Twitter. So there's no private cause of action.
No, I do wonder, what about all the advertising money that maybe a Dan Bongino was spending, and yet they dethralled his account? There could be action there.
Could be. Breach of contract.
Yeah, financial.
And, you know,
like,
but
if they
right.
were, if they were Baker taking your money, Congress, if they were taking yes. your money for ads,
and then
which they wouldn't take
them.
Ours, but then not serving your tweets.
Yes, I think they'd have exposure.
I think then that Section 230 has nothing to do with that.
Correct.
That's not about Section 230 is about content. And it does let them kind of get away with what, and that was really about, because it's so they're not liable for criminal content that gets posted quickly, and they're always trying to get rid of that. But this also, Logan, it shows you where they're spending their time. Instead of going after child pornography
right.
and drugs,
they don't want to talk about abortion.
Maybe what the Ayatollah is saying about just killing all of the Israelis. It was about going, it's very American specific. That's an American based company.
Yep.
Very U.S. specific. About conservative political actors, not sure. elected officials other than Trump, but a lot of conservative political grassroots actors.
Yeah, and we will, yeah, exactly. People, podcasters, radio show hosts. We'll see what all comes out. Maybe there is more on both sides, but for as of now, it's pretty clear that it was swinging very far one way, that it was one side really being targeted for all of this.
Yeah. And then you see this sound from people, and I want to play this going into the break, for people like Eric Swalwell. Mocking conservatives about this, call us conspiracy theorists. This is just in 2022, by the way. This is this year, back in May. Take a listen.
Republicans have this, you know, warped perception that Google and Facebook and others are shadow banning them. When you look at like the best performing pages on Facebook, and it's all conservative voices. But they, again, in their warped minds, they think that they're being affected by big tech. That's their interest here.
First of all, we've noticed that that's not the case anymore on Facebook.
Yeah, you're not getting near as much.
Lately, those are not the top performing posts. And second, it's real. And there was no conspiracy here.
We did have top 10 performing.
Oh, all the time, yeah. And it would still happen from now and then, yes. And I think a large group of people that are still on Facebook that are engaged in those kind of things are conservatives. So that content's
Facebook
still
older.
Older, yeah.
So again, folks, we'll take your calls. 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Are you back on Twitter? Do you feel like, again, are you getting the messages from the people you follow? And will this make a difference? Will you decide, hey, now maybe I'll give this platform another shot? 1-800-684-3110 to be on the show. We'll be right back on Secular. On Twitter, conservative parody accounts, you know, like whether it was Babylon Bee or also liberals of TikTok, which was just an account that would show crazy liberal stuff on TikTok and put it on Twitter because they knew that conservatives weren't going to see that information and likely weren't using TikTok. And that got banned. And that was, again, using public content that people post to say, look how crazy this stuff is, what liberals actually talk like when they're talking to each other and don't think you're watching. And that got banned. And so it's this idea that parody, comedy, even just, you know, kind of news, like exposing what people are putting online, which is all public, that was being intentionally banned, but only if it was coming from a conservative voice. What is clear from all this reporting, Logan, is that the only people targeted were conservative.
It feels that way, unless they're keeping information from us, you know, the Twitter
which
files.
Which makes them look very bad.
I don't think so. And neither Matt nor Barry are like,
right wingers.
No, these are more, honestly, more traditional liberals, if you will, free speech liberals. But yeah, from what it looks like, it was very specific who they were going after, and it was definitely more conservative leaning people. Hey, Elton John just announced 3 hours ago, by the way, he is leaving the platform. He has left Twitter, and he put, because of misinformation that is now allowed to flourish unchecked, Elon responded with, what is this misinformation that he is even referring to? So,
right. Put him in their place a little bit.
One of our listeners on Rumble noted.
Right.
Twitter was not a place for like Elton John.
No.
It was a place for news, political discussion, community discussion, issue discussion, not I have a concert coming up tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, he has million followers plus, but if you look, really, most of it's 100 likes here, 100 likes. I think a lot of people were noticing that too. Is this really where we should be even spending our resources? And look, that's what we had with Twitter. When Twitter was going through all this, we decided, should we even putting our team
into working? So we didn't even know that we were banned from running ads because we didn't want to run ads.
Right, exactly.
But it's interesting. We got a comment from Rumble that said that they have noticed that in the last weeks, people they were following, they are starting to get their information, and the number of followers those people had has gone up, which I just checked on my account, and it went up about 30,000 since I last checked.
A lot of people reactivated also who were inactive, as well as more people joined the platform.
Well, what's happened is that they got rid of a lot of bots. So some of those accounts that weren't real lost a lot.
Disappeared. And if you were up, we're purging the bot. So if you see a notice, we'll drop. Because, look, there are a lot of people, even in the conservative world, that started going, hey, Elon, I lost 10,000 followers. What happened here?
I've actually gained.
Yeah.
I'm saying I'm losing. Maybe even with bots being cleared out, more people are reacting.
I've just maintained. My same few thousand people that follow me are like, that's my people.
Then follow at Logan Secular on Twitter.
It's not as fun, but you can.
And Jordan Secular.
Let's go to the phones. Marty in Florida, online 5. Hey, Marty.
Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate all your hard work. I was just sharing with the person who answered the phone earlier that I've had several negative experiences with Facebook. You know, in different ways, they make it where I'm unable to see or hear or follow on your daily show Monday through Friday. And I had a different experience this morning. A lot of times I'll go to Facebook first because it's just easier to get to on my phone the way my apps are arranged. I was able to see your live broadcast earlier this morning, but the audio part of it was like three or four different live shows going on at the same time, so the words were all so jumbled I couldn't follow anything at all. So of course I switched over to Rumble, but I just wanted to share that. It's on topic, it's not about Twitter, but just another example of our, you know, the message getting out and them controlling.
Like Facebook is worse.
We've had a lot of issues with Facebook.
Like right now, nobody's watching on Facebook, basically.
Not nobody.
But not a lot of people.
600 people. I mean, not as much, but that would be 10,000. Then it was 1,500. There's 2,000, which means notifications are changing the way people are doing, and just the way people, some people have moved. They've moved, like she said, she moved to Rumble.
Once you do that, you don't really go back.
Yeah, well, Rumble's been great. I'll just say it. They've been great.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a much smoother video platform. We never have issues with we don't have to worry about what we're going to talk about that day.
Yeah, the title is not the concern.
What word
will not get served or get served? Which is what we do. We sit around trying to decide what we're going to title these shows. We have to go, what word will Facebook decide to feature? What word will YouTube decide to feature? Not just feature. What will they decide to not feature? That's more it. It's not about what we can use to get people to hook to watch. It's what words can we not use, knowing that it will get banned or be blocked or it'll be shadow banned or it'll be suppressed.
Yeah.
And we know that. We have a list of those words. I mean, for real. We have a list of those words not to use.
Understand that.
And sometimes when we do use them, we see, oh, yeah, we're still right, that those don't get served. Because it's definitely on topics that you care about.
Yeah. No, absolutely. We go back to phones, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Let's go to Kathy in Virginia, online 3. Hey, Kathy.
Hi. I have a question. I'm a grandma, and I read news articles. I watch different news outlets on TV. I don't know anything about Twitter. How did it start? Why did it start? Who started it? Why is it such a big deal? And what's the history of this?
A lot of questions there. Twitter is 2006?
Yeah, maybe even a little bit before then. It's been around 15 years or so, a little bit more than that. I think 15, 17 years.
Short message platform to break news, have discussions.
It was the very beginning of the social media boom.
Yeah, it was the beginning. So you'd set up an account. You could follow people who were well-known. You can interact with them. You had a limit to it, so you could not just post these. You could post manifestos. Then they had video platform abilities. You could post links to that. It became a very good source for breaking news. Still is one of the fastest places out. Sometimes it beats the notifications to your phone. The news actually breaks there first. So Jack Dorsey was the founder of Twitter. And it was, at some point, they were thought about not even ever going corporate and being some multi-billion-dollar company, but being like an open source platform. It's huge internationally. It's big for protest movements. It's big in countries that try to silence speech. What happened was Donald Trump took it to another level.
For everything.
Did he have like 80 million followers? It was a huge number, right?
It wasn't the number one. No. Number one is like a Kardashian.
No,
or
there's some
like
that are like in the billion-ish
Ronaldo,
range.
Soccer player, because he's international.
Yeah, Trump is currently at 87.
I think Ronaldo has like,
I can tell you,
a billion?
106 million.
Yeah. I'm not sure the top. Yeah.
So anyways, athletes use it, people use it, corporations use it to get, it's never quite figured out how to make money.
Nope.
Still. So it's worth a lot because of amount of users, but they're advertised never been about right. And I'm not telling you that it's for everybody. It's not for everybody. I'd say if you're very into the news, if you're very into like breaking news, like you don't want to wait to see it on TV, it's great for that. So first is like Supreme Court cases coming out and the info on that, it gets
there in seconds
before the news and you get to read it. So it's not going to be misreported like in the news, like where somebody may come out in the news and they're trying to describe to you the Supreme Court opinion. And there it's written down, typed out, usually with a hyperlink. You go right to an opinion. Politics, trending, all of
Barack that. Obama actually has the most followers of anyone.
Internationally?
Internationally, total. With 133.5 million.
Maybe it's Ronaldo on Twitter.
Yeah, that is on Twitter, so I'm talking about. And then
Facebook, maybe. Instagram.
Yeah, and then Elon is 120 million, so not that far behind one of the biggest ones.
You know, it's interesting. It was started in March 21st, 2006, San Francisco, California. And it was, I remember when we first went on it, you always would have one friend. It would be Jack Dorsey, the guy who founded it, right? That was a long time ago.
You're thinking of something else. You're thinking of MySpace, I think.
MySpace?
Yeah.
I don't even remember. MySpace. Was that guy named Jack too?
That guy's name was, what was the guy's name on MySpace?
Nah, forget MySpace.
Yeah. Tom. MySpace. Yeah.
There you go.
There's a Facebook of that too.
Was Facebook, did you have to be friends
with their friend?
Zuckerberg? No, it was MySpace. You're thinking of MySpace.
I don't know. Right. Oh, it's Cristiano Ronaldo has over 500 million on Instagram.
Instagram, bigger platform like that, younger, much younger platform.
Yeah, Twitter's an interesting platform. It's a news junkie platform. Yeah.
You started using it again.
Even like sports news, any kind of news, things you need in an instant.
Yes, things you want in an instant. So yeah, if you're like really into sports, you can follow one of your favorite athletes.
Yeah, and then live
coverage.
But
also live commentary from more than just what you'd get on TV.
Yeah, for sure.
So like some true insider, the people who are like just devoted to Georgia Bulldogs news or and reporting on what's happening in the football program in Georgia. Yeah. That is not going to even make like ESPN. Right. It's not a big enough story.
It's like a niche
that.
Audience.
But for fans, yeah. It's great. And so so it's not as much advertising-based. Like, I feel like Instagram gets me more on, like, what I want to buy.
For sure.
Products. That's not Twitter really either. No. There are some funny corporate advertising that's gone on with Twitter where they'll go back and forth. Each, like, Arby's will go after, like, a... get your Wagyu beef at Arby's.
Yeah, they've been trying to figure out all of this of how to even get ads to kind of work on Twitter for years because it never really was a ad platform that made any sense. Where Instagram and Facebook, it's kind of become, which is all the same. That's Meta. They've all figured it out. Twitter, I think, is still trying to figure that out. They're still trying to figure out how to make money with ads or with subscription services or whatever it is they're going to offer.
Yeah. So, folks, we'll continue to take your phone calls. 1-800-684-3110. There's more coming. I mean, that's what's interesting, too. There's a part three. So we now know about issues being banned. We now know about individuals being banned. We know it's all lining up conservative. So far, there's no examples that have been released about liberal issues being banned or liberal individuals.
Yeah, unless it's like a violent something.
Oh, yeah, crime. Something that was criminal or it's like real, so that it shouldn't be there. So, you know, there's a part three. The question is, does it matter to you? Are you just done with this platform and done with the mess of it? Or are you interested in returning back? All right, welcome back to Secular. We're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. One topic we did get to, we got to start a podcast. These attacks on these electrical plants. Boy. And substations, too, not like the main plant. Started out in North Carolina where there were 4 days, and it is very local focused, so it's not like the whole state is without power. And they're trying to figure out what is the conservative effort behind this. People are using basically all it takes is like wire cutters and a couple gunshots, and they're taking out the entire power infrastructure for at least days
for
like a community.
Yeah. And it's also happened now in Oregon and Washington State.
Yeah, it's coast to coast now.
So now the FBI is looking at it. You got to look at it. You have to look into the context of terrorism to start. I don't think you can ignore that that is a possibility because one of the things the terrorists said back, Jordan, when you were working for the Justice Department years ago, during the right after 9/11, it was the issue we were worried about. I was working on the Patriot Act. Was the whole issue of power grid disengagement.
Yeah, and usually we think about power grid attacks as a form of cyber attack. Coming out of like Russia or North Korea or China. This is, again, wire cutters at a substation, which does not have a ton of protection. They have, you know, fencing. You drive by these all the time, your community. And a gunshot to a specific part of the machinery there, and that's it. So one, it shows some inside knowledge into how to use a gun to take out one of these power plants. But two, again, this happens at a widespread scale during the winter.
Oh,
you got real issue. People die.
So look, you know, you always have to look at this. That's why I say you got to look at this in the context of terrorism only, because let me tell you what it does. If you're in that community and your power's out, it's terrifying. Yeah. And
you don't know.
And
when
the fact that somebody is able to do it as easy, Jordan, as you just discussed, they know exactly what to hit. It's wire cutters and a gun, and they can knock out the power grid for an entire community and think, Logan, what was it, 4 or 5 days?
Yeah, I think they said it was until yesterday, I think, that all of it was restored. I'm not sure exactly the details. But we know that's been a big problem. And clearly, with supply chain shortages and getting things to get fixed, it's probably not easy. And there's a lot of these sort of substations where they probably can't guard all of them. Actually physically possible. So it's pretty interesting to see. We do have some other calls.
Let's go back to the phones.
All right, Jane's calling in Dallas, Texas. You're on the air.
Hi, dear. How you doing? I think you said something like, you know, are you done with Twitter or what's your opinion on that, right? Something like that. And my thoughts are no. Why, you know, Elon Musk went through a lot of trouble. His life is probably on the line to let us see what the truth is. And I say, we can't stop. I'm not leaving Twitter. I wasn't even that active on Twitter, but now I will be more active because there won't be the bias. So I say keep going.
I think that's where a lot of people are. I'll give it another shot. I'm not 100% saying like let's say if Elon Musk can actually get a handle of this behemoth. He certainly put the resources there. Him, like Larry Ellison, a few other investors, they put their money where their mouth is. Now, but they're still having to root out the fact that Jim Baker ended up at Twitter from the FBI
so
just for the election period.
That one.
Just the only time he was really there was for the last election. That's when he started, presidential election. So he gets over, he gets removed from the FBI and goes right to Twitter and starts censoring if anything bad about Joe Biden.
It's pretty crazy.
Well, that's where Section 230 also doesn't give you immunity, because you can't use your company to play politics.
No, and
that's very illegal.
And I think, again,
not to say you want to punish Elon Musk for it, but these individuals like Jim Baker, who are attorneys, knew that you can't use your corporation to play partisan politics.
That's correct, because you violate not only your corporate law, but you're violating federal election law.
Right.
Because it's it could be deemed an in-kind contribution to a campaign.
Of like an unbelievable amount to keep a story like the Hunter Biden laptop out.
But the key thing is, we were able to determine Jim Baker's involvement at the FBI level, and then because of our FOIA work and our Office of Government Accountability, and then he goes over to, so we're able to draw the links because we have the emails.
That's why he's a name.
Or else you would have never known who this guy was.
Yeah.
Nobody knows who's could you tell me the general counsel of the FBI today? No.
No, and even the general counsel from Twitter who was let go immediately, no one knew that name.
Yeah, and Matt,
these are board member level.
He put in that thing that when he said that this was coming from a source named Jim, they were finding all the stuff out, and they said when they actually figured out who it was like...
It's like, you got to be kidding.
Yeah, they was just like, they were so stunned.
Because every conspiracy, these again, Blaine Swalwell saying it, I mean, it's like, my God, I wonder what's going on at Facebook. It's got to be even worse.
Well, it is, but you may never know.
And right, they don't have somebody buying it to expose it. But I think it's very similar. I actually think that they have more people doing the same thing.
It probably is similar. I think a lot of these companies, they operate.
They're the similar people. But
isn't the interesting thing that we thought the problem was that it was initially AI, right?
I would always have assumed they blamed on AI, and you kind of assumed that there was some, but you thought it was like trigger words, you know, that you couldn't say.
Abortion, pro-life.
And clearly there is some of that, by the way. There's definitely some of that.
Happened, yes.
But to find out there's actually the people, you know, on the ground, boots on the ground,
looking for Charlie Kirk saying, don't delete his account because we don't want to upset him too much. Just don't share his tweets too far.
Yeah.
Don't let him trend.
Yeah.
Don't let other people who don't follow him
get loud.
Yeah.
Pretty wild.
And again, there is an issue because people have invested resources into these accounts. Section 230 is not about liability from investing and money being exchanged. That's a different issue, I think. Now, again, you don't necessarily punishing Elon Musk, who's trying to fix it. So what he's said he's going to do is create a software program that will allow us to see
how
are you banned, what's your standing in Twitter, and how you can
feel
it.
He's going to actually have an appeal process inside of Twitter is what they're saying.
Yeah, which they have for a lot of social media platforms.
Right now, they've got to get rid of the people.
Look, it's just like Facebook.
Jim Baker was there until a few days ago.
Every time. Yeah,
literally.
Yeah, until Facebook, even with Facebook, whenever they've hit us with something, you have an appeal process. And every time we've won, every single time they've said this is misinformation, disinformation, we've won. But yeah, you know, of course, they don't go out and say, by the way, everyone.
We were wrong.
We were wrong. It wasn't fake news. But it is part of the process. They do have these boards that set in place to do it. And again, usually we win those, but you'll never know that unless we go out and say it. Just like you would never know we couldn't run an ad on Twitter. And we didn't even know until we went to go try to run an ad on Twitter.
I think that what it's going to show with Elon Musk's move here, and then with the Republicans in the House of Representatives, you're going to start learning a lot more, because you're right. They could bring up Jim Baker to the House Judiciary Committee or Oversight and say, what were you doing there? And the fact, again, we pointed this out a week ago because we had the information. And we had the information because of your support to the ACLJ. And we had the information because our lawyers went to court involving the FBI, and we had an email. I don't know if we have it where we could put it up there. It's the one that has – it's from James Comey to Jim Baker, and also to Andrew McCabe, actually. And we're trying to figure – everybody, when we first got this, everybody's trying to figure out who's who. And I said, you know, part of what you have to do here is look – at who the emails are from and to. And we learn a lot just from seeing who's in communication with who. And we certainly found that out. But we didn't find that out without your help, because without your help, we couldn't do it.
Yeah, that's right. So support the work of the ACLJ. This final minute of the broadcast today, if you go to aclj.org right now, you'll see a matching challenge on our homepage. And just to explain it again, it's very simple. We have a group of donors this month of December, final month of the year, say we will match the donations that come through to aclj.org. So if you make a $30 donation to aclj.org today, we have a donor that will match that $30. So it triggers a match. And so you've doubled the impact of your donation. It's like $60 for us, the ACLJ. So we encourage you to support our work that way at aclj.org.
See, this is the Chuck Schumer.
Yeah, Schumer has announced that she is keeping her committee assignment. So she's staying with the Democrats.
Effectively. Yes.
She is or can't?
That's the question. Well, she wants him. Okay. She said she wants him, and now they said you can have him.
Okay. She's basically
they want to keep her in the fold, so which makes
really
sense.
She's really caucusing with the Democrats.
Even if she doesn't show up to the meetings, they said she didn't show up to the meetings before.
Yeah.
But this was, again, I think more of a move for her electorally.
Politically.
At home. She didn't. Yeah. She could have been beaten in a primary by a liberal. All right, we'll talk to you Monday on Secular.